Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. 16 years ago, Greg Mortensen was lost and alone after a failed attempt to climb the deadly K2, the world's second highest mountain. He wandered into a tiny village where the people nursed him back to health. He promised in turn to return and build them a school. Then improbably, amazingly, he did it. The feat was improbable and amazing because Mortensen wasn't some kind of international jet setter and who knew a lot of rich people. He was a climbing bum who literally lived in his car in Berkeley, California. But he was not without means. He was a trained nurse, and most importantly, he had learned the values of hope and perseverance as a child living with his family in Africa, where his parents were missionaries and builders themselves. Since then, Mortensen, through the Central Asia Institute he co-founded with Jean Hernay, has built 130 schools and women's vocational centers, mostly in Pakistan, but also in Afghanistan. He has built bridges spanning cultural divides like no one before him. Mortensen's story is now widely known. With David Oliver Rellen, he wrote the number one New York Times bestselling book, Three Cups of Tea, One Man's Mission to Promote Peace, One School at a Time. He travels extensively to talk about his work. He is scheduled to give 3 sold-out talks at the OSU campus next week. We are lucky today, indeed, to have his mother, Jerene Mortensen, join us because her son's amazing story really started with his family. Jerene, welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm honored to be here.
Well, very much my pleasure. You and your late husband were born in Minnesota and became Lutheran missionaries and teachers. And when Greg was a year old, you packed him up and moved to Tanzania in the shadow of Mount Kilimanjaro.
Actually, he was 3 months old when
was
we
it
went.
During his first year then?
Yes. Okay.
And over the course of your 14 years there, was it?
13.
13, okay. Your husband, Irvin, his nickname was Dempsey, built a teaching hospital and you built a school. Tell me about how you went there and how it turned into a hospital and a school.
Well, my husband had started college and then was in the Army, stationed in Japan. And when he was discharged, I was in St. Cloud, Minnesota, where there is a state teachers college. So he was finishing his education. I was teaching. One Sunday we were in church and the pastor said they need teachers in Tanganyika. He looked at me, said, let's go. And we went home, got out our atlas and looked up on the map where Tanganyika was.
And that is what Tanzania used to be
yes,
called.
Yes, that okay. was before independence and before they merged with Zanzibar.
And where is Tanganyika?
It's just below the equator on the east coast of Africa.
Okay, so you just decided that simply?
It was that simple.
And how long before you actually took off?
Well, I was pregnant, so we waited till Greg was born. And when he was 3 months old, we went.
How old were you at the time?
I was 25.
And your husband?
I was 26.
Wow.
You know, when you're young, you don't know what you don't know.
I think it's meant to, the old saying, you wish you knew what you know now, but I don't know if that's true. So you went there as missionaries. Did you go there with the intent to build a school?
Well, actually, the first stint, my husband was, they called the education secretary, sort of like a superintendent of a county school system. He oversaw all the Lutheran schools in a mountainous area of Tanganyika at the time. And then I taught at a girls' middle school for a while.
And how did it come about that your husband came to build the teaching hospital?
Well, after our 4-year term, we came back to the United States. My husband was teaching social studies in a high school, and he had been asked by the armed forces to teach Swahili at the Army language or the forces language school in Berkeley, and mm-hmm. he'd gone out to look at in Monterey, and he'd gone out to look at that. And when he came back, there was a letter that they were building this large teaching hospital in Tanzania. Would he be interested in being the assistant to the development director? I think he pretended it took 2 weeks to make up his mind, but he was packing when he got the letter. And we went back to Tanzania for another 7 years.
And how long before? One of the things he said at the time when the hospital, when they were done building it, and it sounded like it was the celebration of the grand opening of the hospital. He said that in 10 years, every department head at the Kilimanjaro Christian Medical Center would be a Tanzanian.
That's correct.
And that was very inspiring to Greg.
Yes, and the expatriates all really disapproved of what my husband said. He said, you're setting them up for real disappointment. That will never happen. But it did.
It did. And now that is the case.
That is the case.
He said to them at the time, look what you've done for yourselves and how much more you can do. And that was a big part, big theme, underlying theme in Greg's book. As much work as he did and as much resources as he brought to the game in Pakistan, the people there, he couldn't have done it without them.
That's right. That's right. And for instance, Central Asia Institute is his nonprofit.
Right.
But it isn't the Central Asia Institute School in Corfe. It's the Corfe School, the Hushe School, the Lalander School. Those schools belong to the villages. They built them.
Right. Was his feelings about how to manage something like that, how to look at it in that way, was that something you actively taught him, or was that sort of just by example and growing up?
I'm sure example growing up.
Yeah.
He saw what his dad was doing, but we never sat down and say, now you do this, and
right.
this.
And notice how we're doing this. This is the way you do it. When you return to the United States, well, tell me about your school, though.
At the time, I taught the whole time I was in Moshi. And then before the hospital opened, when my husband was recruiting doctors from Europe and the United States, he saw that there was going to be a big need to have a school right there. There were boarding schools available, but they were far off, and he could see if we're going to have these doctors, we're going to have a school. So he told me we're going to have an international school, and you're going to have to do it. And I said, I can't. I'm not a school administrator. And he said, you're going to have to do it. And I think his confidence in me gave me confidence, and we started the International School Moshi.
When you start something like that, does it first start with the funding? Is that the first thing you do?
It started with the funding first, and between the Lutheran associations in the United States, and we did charge tuition. We kept it very low at that time so that more people could go. We made it. My first year as teaching, I got 700 shillings. That's $100 a month.
When you returned to the United States, Greg was 15?
Greg was 13.
I keep getting his. I'm guessing on the dates then in the book.
He gets it wrong sometimes
okay.
too.
Okay. Thanks. He didn't have an easy time adjusting though to the American schools.
No, you know one thing I didn't realize. My husband didn't realize at the time when we came back to the United States. My husband and I came home. Our kids all went to a foreign country. And he went to an inner city St. Paul school. And when he said that he was an African, the kids just didn't get it. And especially the African-American young men mm-hmm. Gave him a bad time.
Right. And Greg's very tall, 6'4", 6'.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very tall, just a big guy, often referred to as a gentle giant by many people. And he didn't assert himself very much. He pretty much took it and just moved on and was tried to get along and go along.
That's right.
He was an athlete too?
Yes, he played football. He'd never played football before in his life. And when he was a senior, he was punting and broke his leg and took swimming for that. And so he was on the swimming team too.
Yeah, it's sort of remarkable as you're reading the book, you have this sense that you're reading a story about somebody who is thoroughly American in many ways. You don't feel like it's somebody fighting cultures inside of himself. And when you're reading about the struggles he had in high school, he doesn't seem resentful or bitter.
No, I don't think. He does say, though, that's the first time he really ever came across racism. He never thought of growing up in Africa with all these different nationalities and the African children. He never thought of anything in terms of race. And he hit it here in the United States, not in Africa.
Interesting. Well, it was interesting, too, when he joined the Army and was sent overseas to Germany. His best friends were all African Americans who wanted to go and travel and see the world. And he was the happiest he'd been since leaving Africa.
Yeah, I think he fit in there quite well. I know one of the things when he went to Germany, he had taken organ and he wanted to hear the great organs of Germany, but he said the Army did interfere with him traveling around.
Why is that?
Well, you have to do your work.
Oh, I see. He would rather have been visiting.
But when he had a few days leave, that was one of the things he often did.
Okay. He was discharged from the Army, and he briefly attended graduate school.
No, he hadn't finished school, so he went to Concordia College in Moorhead, Minnesota, and then graduated from the University of South Dakota.
Okay. And after that, he traveled?
He started his nursing career in Deadwood, South Dakota, and then went to Indiana, then back to Minnesota, and then California.
Okay, and that's where he was bit by the climbing bug.
Well, actually, when he was 12 years old, the only thing he wanted for his birthday was to climb Kilimanjaro. They didn't usually let 12-year-olds climb, but we were already living at almost 4,000 feet, so he had a little acclimation to altitude. And the porters said, oh, let him go. I didn't think it was a good idea, you know, the mother, but his dad said, go for it. So he climbed Kilimanjaro when he's 12. So I think he got the bug there and it stayed with
him. Just stayed with him. Your husband didn't go with him?
No. No, another 12-year-old friend from Canada.
Okay, we're going to take a break right now. We are talking to Jereen Mortensen. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher, and we will be right back. This is WOSU NPR News.
WOSU News reports on the stories you need to hear and the stories you want to hear.
Rivka was a Muslim, but now she says she's a Christian, an act Rivka says is unforgivable by the Islam faith and her family.
They're pinning this not just on the family, but saying, you know, that this is what Islam teaches. No, that couldn't be farther from the truth.
Get more from your news with the award-winning WOSU News team on WOSU 89.7 FM, NPR News, and classical music.
Good morning, I'm Amy Jurevich. 70 degrees in downtown Columbus at 1020. Cloudy skies today with scattered showers and thunderstorms, and a high of 78 this afternoon.
Support for WOSU comes from Integrate, helping to improve business performance through brand design and marketing communications for more than 20 years. On the web at integrateinc.com or at 614-421-0004.
How long to trust a stranger? How long to share three cups?
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm talking with Jerene Mortensen, the mother of Greg Mortensen, the author of Three Cups of Tea. And that is a song called Three Cups of Tea. And it's being sung by Greg, your granddaughter.
My granddaughter.
Amira. And her voice teacher, Jenny Fleming. It's beautiful. It's
Thank
a beautiful,
you.
Beautiful song. I think that you can get that song, that CD and other things on the website.
You can get it through the website.
What's the name of the website?
www.ikat.org.
Okay, www.ikat.org. That's it. ORG.
That's it.
Gotcha.
That's,
okay.
That's the website.
Well, that's easy. Okay. Well, back to Greg. I was very moved, and I think anybody would be, by his relationship with his sister. Krista was his younger sister?
Yes, Krista was the youngest of the four children.
Tell us about Krista.
Well, Krista, as I said, was the youngest of the four children. She was 10 years younger than Greg. And when she when we were coming back to the United States, because smallpox was still endemic in Africa, she had to have a smallpox as a vaccination. And it got a reaction. Her arm turned black. She had very high fever. She'd been standing, starting to walk. She didn't do that. And we believe that's what triggered the epilepsy. So she had severe epilepsy. She had learning difficulties, was a very, I would say a very sweet girl, much loved by her brother and her two sisters. And she had seen the movie Field of Dreams. And so I said for her birthday, it was after her birthday, but I said, I'll take you to the Field of Dreams in Dyersville, Iowa. When I went down to her bedroom to wake her up, she had died in her sleep. Evidently, an epileptic seizure had triggered something and her heart had stopped. So not only did the other children love her very much, they were very devastated.
She was very inspiring to Greg. He wanted to find the cure for epilepsy at
He
one
did.
Point.
That was one of the things. He went into nursing, and then he was considering going to medical school and then going into research for epilepsy.
He'd been accepted, was it at Case Western?
At Case Western, yes.
So she died suddenly. Was he going to meet you in Iowa for that trip?
No,
okay.
He wasn't that trip.
Okay. But it was her favorite movie. She'd seen it many, many times,
yes.
And it meant a lot to everybody. It was about that time that he was asked to join the K2 expedition as a medic.
It was a little while after that.
Okay.
Yes, they there were a group of, as he said, ragtag climbers going, and they did need a medical person or wanted a medical person along. And with his experience as an emergency room nurse, he went along in that capacity.
This is WOSU 820. If you would like to join the conversation with Jerene Mortensen, please call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. He brought with him sort of a talisman of Krista, an amber necklace.
Yes.
And what did he want to do with that?
He wanted to leave it on the very peak, but he didn't make it to the top.
But he did something very differently.
He did something
that
very...
he has dedicated to her memory.
Absolutely.
Did you hear when he took off on that trip? I was asking you earlier, you know, what did you think when he would be gone for weeks and months at a time?
Well, I wasn't a huge enthusiast of mountain climbing to start with. But at that time, communication was really very poor. And so when I didn't hear from him for a long time, I was somewhat concerned, but I thought, well, you couldn't hear from him anyway. So I really didn't know until he got back what a harrowing experience he had been through.
Now, is that something that he would pick up the phone and tell you all about?
No, he waited until
or did he
saw
let it out
me.
Little bits and pieces.
He waited to give me the whole story when he saw me in person.
Is that when you found out about his plans to build the school as well?
Yes.
What'd you think of that at
well,
first?
Well, um, I I had always been in education, and I guess, you know, was hoping maybe one of my kids would go into education. So I was enthused about the school, but oh, those first months and years raising the money was so difficult.
You knew how he was living.
I did not know he was living in his car.
I wondered about that.
But actually, that had been my car, and I had car camped in it several times. So
it was.
But I'm not
big,
6'4".
It was some kind of big tuna boat, like a Buick, was it? Or
actually, the book says Buick. Actually, it was an Oldsmobile.
Oldsmobile, and he called it La Bamba.
Everyone called it La Bamba.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Well, it was interesting because he had a storage unit, and he said, and of course I did the only logical thing that I could do, and that was, I'm like, well, yeah, you find a place to live. It's like, no, he's going to sleep in the car, because that's how he was able to save money.
Yes, and he was doing everything he could to raise that $12,000.
What sort of things did he do?
Well, he sold all his climbing gear. He cashed in his retirement with the hospital, and still was way short. He arranged some speaking engagements, and if a handful of people showed up, that was quite marvelous, and still didn't have the money. Then, not thinking to raise money, but he was in Minnesota, and the teachers at the school where I was principal in Wisconsin said, maybe Greg could come and just show some slides. It'd be a great geography lesson. So Greg did that. He came, and when he was done, one fourth grade boy came and said, I am going to help you build that school. I'm going to bring my piggy bank. And other children got excited. The student council met. They decided they'd have a fundraiser. Then the teachers met, and one wise first grade teacher said, let's have it be only pennies, because that way the poorest child in school is going to be able to be a part of it. And in 6 weeks, there were 62,340 pennies. So Greg had kind of forgotten about it, and when he got the check for $643, that was the largest amount of money he'd ever gotten up to that time. And when he talks to people, he said it wasn't movie stars, wealthy people. He'd written 580 letters.
Mostly movie stars and wealthy people, yes. And famous people.
And typed them. When I speak to high school kids these days and said he typed 580 letters, they don't get it.
Well, his fingers might still be too big for the keyboard, but it's probably a lot easier on a computer.
That. So then when adults heard children were doing it, but he says it wasn't any of the adults, it was children who first reached out to other children. And that program has grown. Pennies for Peace now. Last year there were over 3,000 groups, and till now over 100 million pennies, over $1 million has come in through pennies, and most of it through children.
And that's in how many years, this?
That started in, it's about 12 years.
Not bad. Not bad at all. Is there a website for Pennies for Peace?
Yes, there is, and that's www.PenniesForPeace.org.
Okay. He in the book, he says that you were anxious for him at the time. You were maybe I'm confusing this, but maybe it's after he took off to go build the school, but you were living in River Falls, Wisconsin. You had finished your PhD by then and were an elementary school principal. And then you invited him to speak about his experiences and his mission. Okay. And, after that, you said it's grown, but how did you keep it going?
Well, word of mouth first, and then there's a headquarters for it, and the National Education Association, the NEA, picked it up and has been publicizing it, and they've made a marvelous toolkit for teachers, explaining the program and with what the children play there, what they eat, what the religion is, mathematics. So it's a marvelous resource for teachers. But I think the National Education Association picking it up really caused it to spread a lot.
What do children, we're always trying to teach them to think of others besides themselves. But why does this, do you think, inspire so many kids?
Well, they have a sense of efficacy. I can do it. I can make a difference. If I can give you an example, I was in a small town in Minnesota, and a kindergarten child came to me and said, I didn't have any pennies, so I went to the bank and bought some. Was that cheating? I assured him it wasn't cheating. And then he said, what are they going to do with my pennies? And I asked him what he would like to have them do. And he said, I want them to buy 100 pencils so 100 kids can write. And that's when I really myself learned what it does for children here. Greg thinks it probably is doing more to promote peace and to empower children in this country than even the money that goes so far overseas.
The words that you spoke about, 100 pencils, that's also included in the lyrics of the song that we heard. I wondered where that story had come from. You're listening to WOSU 820. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I am speaking with Jerene Mortensen. She is the mother of Greg Mortensen, the author of Three Cups of Tea. Pennies for Peace is not part of the Central Asian Institute.
Yes, it is. Right. But it's based in Denver. It's not based in Bozeman. But it is. Yes, it is a part. And you can inquire Pennies for Peace, and it doesn't have to go to Pakistan or Afghanistan. If you have some local thing you want to do or another international one. There's a group of children in Oregon that did the Pennies for Peace drive to keep their local public library open. And when I guess the county board found out children were getting pennies for it, they found money to keep the library open.
Shame them nowadays. There's no money to be had anywhere, so except pennies. I mean, it is interesting about the concept of pennies, that a penny here is worth much more in Pakistan and Afghanistan,
absolutely,
too.
And it can buy a pencil.
It's amazing. When the first thing he did when he went back there, he planned to build a school, and he stopped at a larger city in Pakistan, and I can't pronounce the name of it, but it was larger by many, many times than Corfe.
Oh, yes.
Which is this tiny little dot on the map.
That's correct.
Describe Corfe. You've been there.
Well, Corfe is across a bridge, up a very steep cliff. The homes are built of stone, and they're all built right against each other, so it looks like one stone structure. And then in the village, there was one room that was a guest room with a lovely carpet and pillows around the edge, and we stayed in their guest room.
How many people live there?
I think there were about 300, 350.
And many of them children, but often they don't live very long.
That's right.
I think one of the ways, if I remember correctly, that Greg became involved with the people is after he began to recover from his own struggles after being lost and then found by this village, where he wandered into the village and they took care of him and nursed him back to health. But once he regained his health, he realized how bad off they were health-wise and started to work his way through the village and take care of people and address what he could.
That's right. And he did save a woman who had given birth and the placenta wasn't delivered. And he felt that they had great trust in him, a foreign man, that he was allowed to help this woman. He delivered the placenta and she lived and is fine.
Right, the proverbial infidel.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
You met a lot of the people then that he knows from there. Does he stay in touch?
Yes, somewhat. There is no electricity in almost all of the villages where he works, but through his staff there, and his staff goes out and visits the different villages. One of the problems he has now is when he does go to Pakistan and Afghanistan, it's impossible for him to visit 130 schools, and they all want him to come.
And it's schools and vocational... What would I call those? They're for the women, the vocation.
Yes, well, in so many of the villages, there's absolutely no place for the women to meet. And now that the schools are there in the evening, they can go to the school after their work is done. And they've set up in many of the places with sewing machines or teaching knitting. So they have some, are able to learn some skills and have some vocational training. So it went hand in hand with building the schools in many of the villages.
Helping educate girls and women is an important issue for Greg. He was sensitized to the plight of women there pretty early on in his experience. Noticed that they just didn't have the same rights. They didn't have the same access to education. Even in the poorest places, sometimes children were sent away for education, but not the girls. And I thought it was interesting, one of the first... Not long after the first school, he started thinking about I can't remember what he called it, but it was a place where the women could go to sew and learn vocational skills.
And it's a room in the school that they can use in the evening.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And they brought in sewing machines?
Not even treadle machines. It's a little machine you operate with your hand to turn the crank around, but it is wonderful. For the people there.
Do they still make those or are they just very old?
They still manufacture them in the third world countries.
Okay. So the first trip he went, he brought $12,000 with him. He bought all this stuff to build a school. And when he got to a certain point in his journey to Corfu, he was told, well, we really can't do it this way. They needed a bridge.
They needed a bridge.
So what'd he do?
Well, he went back to the United States. He went to this John Herney, one of his main contributors, and said, we really need a bridge. To get to Corfu Village at that time, there was a cable across the river with a box underneath that one person could sit in and a pulley, and you went back and forth across the river that way. The nearest bridge was a half a day away. So first they built the bridge.
You are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're going to take a quick break. I'm talking with Jereen Mortensen right now. She's the mother of Greg Mortensen, co-author of Three Cups of Tea, the story of how he has changed lives with his brand of diplomacy. Education. This is WOSU 820 NPR News. We'll be right back.
I listen to NPR every day. It gives us insight into why people do what they do and have a passion for it. We hear from people in their words, and it's not the reporters telling us what this and that person said, whether it's about the economy in the United States or the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. I'm Bethany Donnell, and WOSU is my source for in-depth reporting in a soundbite age.
And you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good morning, I'm Amy Jurevich, 70 degrees in downtown Columbus. In just about 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, hour two of All Sides, we'll hear about a record $2.3 billion criminal and civil settlement paid by Pfizer Incorporated for illegally marketing prescription drugs. And a look at concerns about drug companies' influence on the practice of evidence-based medicine. That discussion is coming up at 11 o'clock on All Sides with Ann Fisher, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. In the weather forecast for today, mostly cloudy skies and a good chance of scattered showers, maybe a pop-up thunderstorm this afternoon, a high of 78. Clouds tonight with a chance of evening rain. Cloudy skies overnight as well, a low of 64. And for Wednesday, cloudy skies with rain in the morning, and then a warm day in the afternoon on Wednesday with a high near 85. And now, back to All Sides. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. And once again, that is Amira Mortensen, Greg Mortensen's 12-year-old daughter.
13 last Sunday.
Spoken like a true grandma. She is singing that with her voice teacher, Jenny Fleming. That is, the name of the song is Three Cups of Tea for the books. That, in fact, there are three books. There's Three Cups of Tea, the one that I read last night, which is the sort of the adult edition. Then there is Three Cups of Tea, One Man's Journey to Change the World, One Child at a Time, which is the Young Readers Edition. And then Listening to the Wind, the story of Dr. Greg, and Three Cups of Tea. Why all the different books?
Well, after Three Cups of Tea was published, the publishers were hearing from schools that wanted to have it for the students in the schools to read. But the adult version was a little long and a little difficult, so the publishers decided to do a young readers version. They hired a woman who specializes in doing YR books from nonfiction books, and then also took the suggestions. There should be a glossary, there should be maps, there should be colored pictures. And then independently, a woman wanted to do a children's version.
A
young children's. She's an artist, and personally, I love the art.
Yeah, the art is, it's cutouts in three-dimensional. Very beautiful. Like, a lot like Eric Carle.
Yes.
A lot like his work. You can get links to the three books, the Three Cups of Tea site, Pennies for Peace, and Central Asia Institute, on the All Sides page. That's all side, or WOSU.org/allsides. It's mentioned a few times in the book, particularly at the beginning, that Greg is never on time.
That's correct.
it wasn't mentioned often, but it made me think about it as I was getting toward the end, that he really does kind of go places and doesn't necessarily come back when he says he's going to come back.
He lives on African time. As an example, one year when he was coming home for Thanksgiving, he got there on Saturday.
Of course, not the Saturday before Thanksgiving.
Not the Saturday before.
Did you hold the turkey?
We ate turkey, but there was turkey for him.
In Africa time, why do you call it that, African time?
Whatever you're doing, whoever you're with, that takes precedence. When Greg was young, he went to see a friend of his on the train, and the train was supposed to come in just before about 10 o'clock in the morning. So we were at the train station, and it didn't come, and it didn't come, and it didn't come. Finally, when it got to be 4 in the afternoon, I got to talk to the station master, and I said I was worried. Where was the train coming? He said, "Leo, Mama, Leo, today, Mother, it'll come today." And it did.
It kind of changes your attitude on life. He had to learn the lesson of slowing down in another way, too, though, in terms of building relationships. And he learned that from a wise man in the farthest reaches of Pakistan. And that's sort of a turning point for him. And that's the title of the book comes from that moment. Can you describe that?
Well, Greg was American enough at that time. He wanted to get things done, and Haji Ali told him, "Greg, here you have to have three cups of tea. The first one, you're a stranger. The second cup of tea, you're a friend or an honored guest. And the third cup of tea, you're family. And we'll do anything for family." And Greg says that doesn't mean you sit down and drink three cups of tea, but it means you have to build the relationships first. And I think I really got that family thing on the day after 9/11, 9/12, when his driver called me from Pakistan. I'm sure it was a month's fares that it cost him to call me, but he said, "Don't worry about your son. He is my brother, and I will protect him with my life." Well, nothing happened in Pakistan, but that day, I think all over the world, no one knew for sure what was going on.
If you'd like to join the conversation with Jerene Mortensen, call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll take a call now. Pat, you're on the air.
Yes, I am just thrilled to get to talk to Greg's mother. It seems like a long time ago that I read Three Cups of Tea. What year did it come out?
It came out 3 years ago in March.
Okay, well, I belong to a book club, and I think there are dozens, if not hundreds, of book clubs in Columbus, and I think all of us. I thank the Lord that I belong to a book club, because that's how I heard about Three Cups of Tea, and I think all of us read it, and we just savored it. And I think Greg is a true national treasure.
Pat, what struck you about the book? What do you remember the most?
Well, I think the whole fact that he was so giving, and how he just, because of his mountain climbing incident, that's how it all started, and of course his roots back in Africa. I have gone on just one of those safaris where you go to Tanzania and Kenya, and the beauty of that whole area. I can see that probably had a big influence on him, his early upbringing. But I alerted my son, who's a biology professor in Dillon, Montana, and a big environmentalist. I said, "You've got to get out and read this book. In fact, you and Greg are brothers on the skin, because my brother loves the outdoors and the environment." And
well, Pat, did you have a question?
Well, my question is, if Greg's going to be speaking on campus somewhere, I think I'm going to alert my book club if they're going to allow people to come. I'd love to hear him.
It is open to the public. It's an event that's scheduled for freshmen or first-year students. The tickets are free, but they're very limited, and you'll have to call OSU to find out how to get them. I wouldn't hold out too much hope, but you never know, and there may be some available at the door at the time of the event.
I think that she should be so proud of her son, and he's an inspiration. I really remember in the story what comes back to me. It was the building of the bridge and how that bridge was so important.
Yeah, me too.
Well, welcome to Columbus, and thank you for having her today.
Thanks, Pat.
Uh-huh.
Rita, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to say this is a fantastic show. It's such an inspiration, her whole family, her son. And I also wanted to let her know that as a fellow African, I understand absolutely about being on African time. you can say, I'll be there at 1 o'clock, but African time, it could be 6 p.m. that evening.
How long did it take you to figure that out?
It didn't take me that long to figure it out, because that's the way I was living. So it was the people who were coming who had a problem.
Right. It's that first jolt of reality, but it's probably something pretty easy to get used to. Huh?
Exactly. It's one of those, it will get done. It will get done. Just not at 1 o'clock, maybe at 9 p.m.
Well, thanks, Rita.
And I also wanted to talk about the little notion about racism and how I didn't notice it either until I came here. It was the weirdest thing.
How long had you lived in Africa before you moved here?
I was 7.
Okay. Okay.
And I moved here when I was 7, and I came here and I thought, what's going on? I'm African. What do you mean? What am I?
It's
black
a
girl. Why, what?
It's a dichotomy, isn't it? Well, thanks for calling, Rita.
Encourage your family to continue your good works. And my sister is a teacher, and she has your packet through the NEA. And she actually was telling me about it recently. So I think hopefully we'll be able to set something up with her school district, too.
Well, thank you
very
much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Lori, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm just joining the conversation. I don't know if this has been asked before, but I would like to ask Greg's mother, what are some things that you did or taught or spoke about when you were raising him to create such a great person? And I'll just listen to what you have to say off the air.
Thanks, Lori.
Well, it takes a village to raise a child, and that's the kind of village he grew up in. But I think one thing my husband and I did, we communicated our values. We talked a lot about what we thought was valuable. And I think all of our children carry those values. And I think it's important that you discuss them.
But you also acted on them, too. You were missionaries in Africa. I mean, not very many people get to grow up that way, but not everybody has to grow up that way to be that way either.
No. I would give my husband as an example, who grew up in a very small northern Minnesota Norwegian community, and he carried his mother's values. So, yes, seeing it, certainly. But they need to hear it, too.
You mentioned Greg's daughter now is growing up with this atmosphere of activism and helping others. And you mentioned that she was at an event over the weekend.
She was just at a big Pennies for Peace rally in Red Rocks in Colorado. And I just talked to her yesterday and asked her about it. And she said, oh, it's just wonderful. I met so many activist kids. She's 13.
Doreen, tell us, speaking of kids, what you're doing in Grandview this week.
In Grandview, I've been speaking at the schools. I was at the middle school yesterday, the elementary school tomorrow. I'll be with some high school English classes tomorrow. And Grandview is doing a community, Pennies for Peace. All the schools are going to be working on it. And we're talking about Pennies for Peace and what Central Asia Institute is doing in Pakistan and Afghanistan.
What kind of questions do the kids ask you? Because a lot of them have read the book before you arrive, I assume.
Yes. They ask general questions, but I was amazed yesterday when some sixth graders asked me, how did I feel about my son doing this work? And one even asked, how did I feel when he got married to someone he had only known for 6 days?
That's right.
And to hear sixth graders asking those kinds of questions, I thought, wow.
So the Young Readers Edition includes the six-day courtship.
I hope that isn't being set out as an example.
Well, it was an amazing meeting, though. He met his wife, Tara,
mm-hmm.
at an event. Just tell it to me.
Well,
I'm sure you've heard it many times.
Sir Edmund Hillary was speaking at the American Himalaya Association. And it was very warm, and as Sir Edmund has gotten older, he tended to go on, and Greg was warm. He walked back to the back of the auditorium, and here was this lovely lady. They started talking together. Greg didn't have a car there. She said she'd take him home, and 6 days later, they got married.
She did take him home 6 days later. By the way, the event in Grandview that Jereen is appearing at is sponsored by the Grandview Heights and Marble Cliff Education Foundation.
Yes, and I didn't mention that. I'm going to be at the high school speaking for the public on Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock.
Okay, and is that free?
That's free.
Okay. 7 o'clock at the Grandview Heights High School.
Yes.
Okay. I guess everybody sort of wonders about something like that, the whirlwind relationship. But they're together, and she's turned out to be his soulmate. I mean,
yes, absolutely. Absolutely. A couple years ago, their 10th year of wedding, they had the wedding reception in Montana.
Some years back, have you been to Corfe more than once?
No, I've only been in Corfe one time.
Corfe, I'm sorry. And they had, when you went to Corfe, what did you see there that told you that Greg had done this? Anything?
Well, the reception I got was, I mean, they're very hospitable people. But I was on some kind of pedestal because I was Greg's mother. And I think what really struck me is their admiration, but also the genuine affection they had for each other, Greg for them and they for Greg.
And there were new generations of children that by then going to the school.
They were just starting when I was there.
They were just starting. Mm-hmm. What was it like? Describe the school. That very first school.
Very plain rooms, cement floors, windows, lots of nice light, which their stone houses didn't have. Open porch in the front where they could have lessons outside. And the boys' rooms on one side, the girls' on the other, because they do prefer for separation, if at all possible.
Equal but separate.
Equal but separate.
There was Greg's been in a lot of danger. We haven't gotten to that much, but he once was taken hostage for some days and held. Was it by the Taliban?
Yes.
Okay. Can you talk about that a little bit, about what he faces?
Well,
and what he has faced.
The time he was held captive, he had gone into a territory without being invited and without local escorts. Now, anytime he goes any place where he hasn't been before, the local people come. And in several areas in Afghanistan, the commandant sends a jeepload of armed men.
I've just got a few more minutes. Do I have a few more minutes? 90 seconds, okay. But could you say, why did they let him go that time? Did he ever figure that out?
It was between two feuding clans, and they settled their dispute, so they decided they'd let the hostage go. And I think the marvelous thing was that as they were celebrating, killed a goat, they stuffed money in his pockets for schools.
Because they found out what he was there for.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very, very inspiring. Well, we're out of time. And my thanks to Jerene Mortensen. I've had so much fun talking with you today, and thanks for taking the time to visit with us. I know how busy you are.
Thank you very much, and I am loving Ohio.
Great. Her son, Greg Mortensen, will be in town next week to talk about his life and his mission in Pakistan and Afghanistan at Ohio State University. In the meantime, you are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.